Wait, you want to teach people practical skills?
Yeah, right.
But how are you going to design a test for that? See, it's nonsense. It doesn't work.
Or, for example, GTD, like, you know, productivity, you know, like the basics of productivity.
Oh, no. That's religion. That's like no evangelism. No.
If you are inspired by an idea, if you buy an idea that people sell to you, you will, you know, jump on the bandwagon and not just say, oh, school is boring, everything is boring, life sucks.
Hello, I'm Radek.
I'm Michael.
And this is the podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books read I want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day working on our app Nozbe.
Or whatever else comes to mind.
So we're continuing our rant on universities and education and schooling. We started it last week, so if you haven't listened to episode number 97, then stop this, listen to last week's episode, and come back here.
Yeah, so 97 was the one, and it's 98. We keep talking about this because there's still so much to say. And actually, I think last time we were there, you left us with a homework.
Yeah, so my homework, ironic, isn't it, was the book Stop Stealing Dreams by Seth Godin. It's a short book, free PDF. I recommend everyone read it, but if you didn't, that's fine too. And Stop Stealing Dreams made a very strong, very compelling, at least to me, case that schools, like the schooling education system, was fundamentally designed for a different era, because like it was set up for the industrial age, for the industrial revolution, when suddenly a need arose to have, you know, a large number of educated workers who would be reliable and obedient in like performing tasks in like a factory or something like that, right? And a lot of the ways that schools are constructed is, I think, reminiscent of that, right? Like the way schools tend to work, it teaches you obedience and reliability in performing, you know, arbitrary tasks set out by your superiors.
Yeah, that's what we discussed. I remember in last episode when I said that you're supposed to go to primary school, then to the secondary school or high school, and then go to college, and then you get a job, and then you retire, and then you die. So like there is this there's this whole thing that we are supposed to be doing, and it's just it's like a perfect system, right?
Yeah, it's part of a paradigm, right? Like a frustrating thing for me in school was just how rarely it actually taught me anything effectively. Like it was shocking to me after school how many things I've rediscovered and found actually really, really interesting. Like I've been reading, you know, books on things related to biology or history, like things I could not care less in school. And like that's not just an accident, I don't think. It has to do with like the very fundamental way teaching those things at school was approached. Like it was very rare in my experience that in school things were taught effectively, like like the fundamental structure of things would be explained, that you'd be given reason why something is the way it is and how things connect and why it's important or why it's relevant, or would show you connections between concepts, because that wasn't the point. It wasn't really the point to teach you those things in a way that would be effective, that would make you remember for a long time, that would make you interested in it. The point was that you had an arbitrary task of, you know, having to learn X amount of material for the next exam, and then you'd never have to use it again. And that was the whole point. And so you'd do that.
I remember just from my even college times, so from studies, university degree, when I on my first and second year was a lot about statistics, and And, you know, we laugh. Very often we in Europe laugh at Americans because Americans are always like, are you excited? You should be excited and things like that, right? But actually, they at the university, they didn't get me excited about statistics because they just taught me how it's supposed to be, the formulas, the, you know, the cold thing about it. Now, when I'm actually applying statistics in our marketing work, in our, like, you know, in many things that we do, and I read a book, for example, like Naked Statistics or things like that, it's freaking exciting. It's really good. I mean, there are so many cool things with statistics that you can do, that you can figure out the world with statistics if you apply them well. But why, oh, why didn't they sell it to me? And they didn't sell the idea of statistics to me first, and then really teach me how to do it, you know?
Yeah, they never sell you an idea why it's relevant to you, why it's important.
Like, exactly. And then they just decide to dive deep into like a piece of knowledge without actually explaining why you should care. And I remember biology was in high school. It was my drama. I mean, after high school, if you would take me to a local forest and ask me to name the trees around me based on their leaves, I would fail 50%. I would not know which trees I'm looking at. But I would tell you all about mitochondria and all the other cells and deep biological stuff. But actually, if I go on a walk with my daughter, she would ask me about the trees, not about the mitochondria, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the example of statistics, I think, is a perfect one because I had a similar thing. Like, there was some brief mention of statistics by my math teacher in high school, but she was like, I don't really, like, I don't know what this is for. Like, she pretty much didn't get it. And so she certainly didn't sell us on it. And right now, like, I know very, you know, next to none of the proper math behind statistics, but I can always look it up. But like, I understand the reason why, I understand why it's relevant, I understand like which tools to look up how to do exactly when I have a need, right? And that's really found in school, that they would explain things in such a way that like you can mentally place it on your like map of things, right? You just learn the formula for the next exam and then it goes away.
It's like they don't encourage you to understand, you know, that like,
no.
Just learn by heart, learn because I say so or because it's like this, but they don't encourage you to really understand why you're learning this, how this works, you know when you work, we are kids, and even when we are not kids, we still like to play with Legos. So we want to play with Legos because we want to see how things are built and we want to build them ourselves. And we both wasted lots of precious hours of our lives building Legos.
No,
and
not wasted.
No, not wasted. Invested. Whatever. We spent. And we're going to spend more again. So that's really great. I mean, I just got a big Lego, you know, the Porsche thing for Christmas. It was fantastic. Anyway, I always liked the subjects where I could really understand thing, where I could understand the thing, the matter, and I could get to it, not just arbitrarily learn it by heart. But even if you know, like even in history class, if something you had to be learned by heart, why not, you know, make it really a good story, a compelling story, which helps you learn this thing, you know, and just no, you have to just remember the dates, remember this, remember that, and just, you know.
Yeah, but like, there's one important difference between like history. A lot of the times it has a lot of kind of raw data, and partly that's just characteristic of what history is, that a trait of the subject. But partly that's, you know, in school you just have to learn a bunch of dates or something like that by heart. But I mean, what's the point? Who cares? What difference does it make in your life? But on the other hand, like I was reading last year Sapiens and Guns, Germs, and Steel, and what I found fascinating about them was it was kind of meta history. It was kind of theory of history. It had a lot of things that happened, and some of them I remembered, some of them I didn't, but more importantly, it explained a structure of things, like a causal connection between like major events in the history of humanity.
Exactly.
And that's far more interesting, and that's something you can learn quite effectively, because it makes sense. Like it creates a map of concept. You can put it like in the lattice of your mental models, not a bunch of like arbitrary raw data that you can always look up online. Like it doesn't matter that mm-hmm. you remember a date of some boring event where some one boring king, like it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things most of the time, right? Some major events, sure, but like the structure of things is far more interesting, far more compelling usually. You can understand it much better, but it's really very interesting from the point of view of this, you know, paradigm of schooling, because you can much easier design a test that shows that either you're worthy or not based on raw data. That's much easier to verify than your understanding of, you know, the mental model, right?
Yeah, I mean, and this is what this is the particular case where I hated the tests, especially on the university, but also in high school, when the test was, as you said, designed to check if I know the raw data. Right, and very often it was like an ABC test, right? And sometimes like the question would be something, and then there would be like three versions, right? And sometimes the question was posted like this that I could actually explain all of the answers, like and all of the answers I could give a compelling reason why this answer is good, you know. But no, the author wanted to see if I remember the date or whatever, or they wanted me to come up with an idea what they actually were thinking about when they were stating this question. So like they didn't check my understanding of the matter. They checked if I remembered something correctly, which is just stupid.
Right, it is stupid, but the point made by Seth Godin was that it makes perfect sense in the paradigm for which the school system was designed.
Right.
Because it's not fundamentally about teaching people. There's part of that, and it's important. Like, it exists there. But it's just not fundamentally geared toward, you know, making you the smartest possible person in the amount of time you're going to spend there. But the point is to prove that you prove to the system that you're capable enough to pass through the system. And so like the exact nature of those tasks is arbitrary, right? So it didn't matter that, you know, I had in high school when, you know, it was already like some specialization and you had like, I was like math, physics, computer science. That was the specialization, right?
Yeah.
And I had history where we went through the same boring things we had in middle school, none of which I remember by now. We had geography where for the third time in my schooling career with the same teacher I had also in middle school, I was learning the types of soil and then exact names and dates for geological eras. Who cares? But it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter that it doesn't make sense, because that's not the point, right? So like it's kind of pointless to argue on this kind of shallow level that, oh, the schooling system could be made so better so that you learn more effectively, but it's pointless without tackling the deeper level that...
So the reason why the schooling system exists and what it should actually do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so... right now, especially in the information age, where we can look up everything, the idea is that we should embrace life differently. That we shouldn't be the mindless cogs and the obedient cogs in a system. And this is what I see every day whenever somebody approaches me about the way we work. And we're coming back to this, that we are this different company that just works differently, and many people don't understand that this is we are not unique by any means, but we are different than this system that the school system is following. So so this still industrial age thinking. So what do you think? What should be done to change the whole thing, the whole approach to teaching?
Oh, it's such a hard question, because it's like, It's so deeply entrenched with like everything, that's such a complex system, and it's connected with like politics and everything. So it's really hard. I don't know how to get around fixing it. But a point I would make as for what I said earlier is that it's not just me being cynical about how schooling is. It's like, it makes perfect sense. Like, if it was designed for the industrial age and it's supposed to spit out reliable workers, for that it actually works quite good, right? You're going to learn a bunch of basics, you know, not just like beyond the elementary things from primary school. You will learn some things about the world which are useful. Most of it you'll forget, obviously, but some will stick with you. But along the way, it does, you know, being good at school, going through this schooling system does require you to develop a kind of discipline, right? A discipline to like take arbitrary tasks given you by the teachers, your superiors, and perform them on time, right?
Yeah, and but even, you know, I would argue that even if the schooling system is for that, so to prepare us for like this industrial age thing, so even that, there are many skills that the schooling system is not teaching us. Like, I have just three that just come straight to my mind. So I was always arguing that, you know, everybody should be learning touch typing. So typing very fast on the keyboard, because we will be using keyboards all the time, right? And if you want to create, you know, cogs in the system that work efficiently, you should actually teach them touch typing, because it's not biology, it's not history, it's not computer science even. It's just touch typing, but it's something that, you know, everybody should be fast at, because you're gonna be writing lots of things in the future.
Wait, you want to teach people practical skills?
Yeah, right.
But how are you going to design a test for that? See, it's nonsense. It doesn't work.
Or, for example, GTD, like, you know, productivity, you know, like the basics of productivity.
Oh, no. That's religion. That's like no evangelism. No.
Okay, but you know, everybody who finishes school, so getting organized, productivity, you say no. Okay, well, so they will have to figure this out themselves. Another thing, when you are supposed to get a job and then get a mortgage and buy an apartment, right? This first part, the banks will screw you over the first time on the mortgage, because you have no clue about getting a mortgage. You have no clue about, you know, negotiating with the bank. You have nothing about it. I know, because my first mortgage is shit and I'm still paying this. So and they don't teach that. They don't teach these practical skills, like something that, you know, you're gonna to actually use in your real life. So what I'm saying is that even to create these cogs that will fit in the system, even for that, the school fails, because there's so many practical skills that they should be teaching, you know, to really create, you know, more efficient and better cogs.
Yeah. That's actually a really, really interesting point. Yeah, that even for that, a different mindset of actually teaching you practical things for which it's difficult to design a test makes sense.
Exactly. Because these are the skills that you will need later.
Yeah, and to me, the tragic thing is that, like, again, I mentioned politics is involved. And so there are a lot of forces which are trying to push on the system, right? There are teachers who, on one hand, want their life easier, some other kinds of teachers which want to teach kids, you know, more, and some people who want to push to have practical skills included. And so to me, the tragic thing is seeing how people try to add these practical things to the existing system, to the paradigm that already exists,
yeah,
and they fail. So throughout high school, I had this subject, which I guess you could roughly translate to the basics of entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And it tried to tackle actually some interesting things, but it was one of those subjects that, because no one learned anything from that, because either it gave you things for which, you know, you didn't have to really pass an exam for, and so no one cared, or you did have to pass an exam for, and so it was kind of, it was skewed to fit in the system where, like, you have to, you know, learn something by heart so that you can pass a test, and those were useless too, right? And it was supposed to be the place where you do learn things like, we had some like elements of employment laws,
mm-hmm,
and like some you know, basic concepts from microeconomy,
mm-hmm,
and personal and like finance. It could have been useful, interesting, but of course it failed miserably. Like, none of that was actually useful.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about our friend Michał Szafrański and his Financial Ninja book, you know, that he also said,
yeah,
you know, the personal finance, like people have no clue about it. They don't know how to save money or just manage money. Another practical skill.
Right, but back to your previous point, mm-hmm. That the world is changing. Like that's exactly right. Like we're going to need increasingly more and more, I guess, creative, entrepreneurial kind of people. The factory jobs are going away. All the vehicle drivers will disappear. Like all of the stuff will be automated. And like it or not, like this is happening. It can be tragic because like a lot of people will be put out of jobs. But it's already started, right? And over time, like a lot of the white collar jobs, like simple white collar jobs, will disappear as well. Also will be automated. And so like we need a new kind of workforce that can fit in this new world. Because like again, like it or not, I think it's inevitable. And so but the way the schooling system is structured, it doesn't, you know, produce people who can fit in that system unless they decide to do that on their own, which is rare.
Which brings us to the point of obedience, for example. So obedience is one of the fine traits for the school system. The children should obey everything that the teacher is saying and should exactly follow the rules. And even though, I mean, like we discussed on the last episode how I did my studies, and it was anything else but obedient. I was doing totally different things, and not exactly according to my not everything, but most of the things I was doing just my way, right? And mm-hmm. and right now, when we are hiring for our team, for Nosby team, we are hiring people who can be independent, who can work from homes independently, not being obedient, and even. They, and really, we have a great team. Even they, when we meet and when we discuss some things, even there creeps up this obedience thingy, you know, sometimes, you know?
Yeah, we discussed it a few episodes ago where you can see a strain of people wanting to have more hierarchy, more
exactly.
bosses.
Exactly, exactly. So even in this environment where we have, like, I would argue that we have, you know, in our team really unique people who are really very good working independently, there is still mm-hmm. this creep of obedience coming in. And so there's really lots to be fixed. And when people ask me, you know, who should I hire, and, you know, what's important when you're hiring people who will be working remotely, and one of the most important things is what I say is that they have to be independent. But to become independent, you know, at school, you should be given some freedom. You should be given some freedom to choose, to experiment mm-hmm. on your own, to cultivate your curiosity. Yeah. You know, all these things that are a bit away from the obedience thingy. You know, they are a different mindset, of a person who is treated, as a partner to do things together, and not person there that has to obey the orders.
Yeah, and school. Not only doesn't cultivate curiosity, it kills it, right? Like every time you try to be creative in school, you're punished.
Yeah, totally. I have so many examples from my life, from my brother's life, like from our life in school, where it was just amazing.
Yeah, and like the essential kind of way in which you do things at school, again, it's very reminiscent of the kind of industrial age factory worker. You are given an arbitrary task. It doesn't matter if you think what you think of it. It doesn't matter if you fully understand it or understand the reason why, because it doesn't matter. You're given an arbitrary task for which you're shown a fairly simple path for resolving it, right? So you'll have your lectures and you'll have your textbook. You have a bunch of things that you have to learn by heart. And then you have to show that you can do it on a test, and then it doesn't matter anymore, right? But what we need, like I think that kind of competence in doing things in that way is going to be less and less useful in the future. I think we need more and more people who can take a bit of a broader task, like something more high level, and be self-reliant and like take it, own it, you know, take a problem, figure out on your own how to solve it. Teachers should be more like kind of mentors or guides showing the way for which you can solve it should be, as you said, have some space to experiment, to learn on your own, to be curious, to pick up your own projects, to choose more of the things you want to do and learn. You should have more, again, more projects, actually, things to create, and not just show that you can perform these arbitrary tasks like of learning raw data. And when you are learning things, like, you could do it so much more effectively, and like stop teaching as much raw data that no one cares about, and that's not relevant in anyone's life in the long term. But instead, like, teach more fundamental things, and also teach more practical skills, as you said.
Yeah, and like, I'm saying this. Luckily, for example, the school where my kids are going, for example, my oldest daughter, she's in the second primary. I can see that the teacher is trying really hard to cultivate this curiosity, to give them some space, to give them space to explore, to feel things, to test things, and this is what I. And for me, for example, the shock was when I was, again, compared to in my last episode, when I went to Germany to study from Poland. And again, not trying to condemn the whole Polish system, just please don't email me. But my experience was when I was in Poland that the professor is over there. He's this big guy, this, you know, important guy, and I shouldn't be, you know, interrupting them. I shouldn't be approaching them. They are the professor. I am the student. I should just learn what they've got to say. And then I remember that immediately when I went to Germany, the first thing was the professor, like, he was our partner. He was doing things with us. He was really, it's not like he was really friendly with us. No, but he was really on the same level. He wanted us to do things with him. So he was our leader, you know, our leader, but not our, you know, as I said, leader mentor, and not manager god, you know. and that for me there was it was at first it was a little bit strange, and I was a little bit, you know, lost, because, you know, there's this professor and he's really important, and then he just asks me for an opinion. I'm like, like, what should I do now, you know? So is it a tricky question or something, you know? So this, you know, becoming the partner and the co, you know, like, partner of the kid, partner of the person you're teaching, I think this is the key. And and this is what really, you know, ignites then the curiosity and the will to do something more from the student.
Yeah, because for me there was none of that. There was no one igniting my curiosity to learn anything. With a few exceptions, of course. There were maybe one or two teachers who were actually really good and really passionate, but that was the rare exception, right? Not the standard. There were the teachers going out of their way to do something better within the, you know, being confined to the system they're in, right? But the broader system doesn't encourage such behavior, right?
I'll give you an example that just a few days ago, my daughter, she came up with this idea because we were learning something at home, and she came up with this idea, Father, let's take the photo of this and this, and then she started taking a few pictures, and she said, okay, let's create a presentation from that and just let's send it to my professor. And my first reaction, you know, because I was still, you know, grown in this old system and everything, and my daughter is 8, right? So I was like, should I, you know, as a parent, bother this professor and send him some stuff that my daughter, who's 8, asked me to send and things? I mean, should I really, you know, bother him? I mean, yes, she's passionate about it. She, like, maybe he encouraged her in a way, but maybe I shouldn't, you know? Maybe, you know, I'm going to spoil his, you know, whole class and everything, you know, just... And then I asked the teacher, and he said, "Yeah, come on, send me stuff. I mean, because we have this moment at the end of school day when we actually discuss things that people are sending me and discuss ideas that the children have." And I'm like, "Okay." So I was just, you know, I was surprised that my daughter had already a different approach. She didn't have this feeling that the professor is so up high there. She had this feeling that, you know, my professor encourages me to do things, so I'm going to send them stuff. And I was, you know, I was kind of blocked, you know.
Yeah, but keep in mind that your daughter is in, you said, second grade?
Yeah, yeah.
That's different.
Yeah, of course.
I expect to be disappointed when she gets to 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th grade.
Exactly. But anyway, what I was saying is that even, you know, I had some, you know, barriers of them. I think they was like, what to do?
Yeah. Right, because like you already have expectations for how the system is.
Exactly, exactly. And these are not high expectations.
Well, I guess that's good. I think on some episodes we're talking about my skepticism. And like if you don't have high expectations and something actually exceeds it, that feels pretty good.
Yeah.
But don't change your expectations.
Exactly.
See, like back to teaching you useful things.
Yeah.
As I mentioned last week, I have a lot of friends who are studying computer science, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's really disheartening how little useful skills they actually learn in there. I would say maybe even most of what they have is math, like higher, really hard math. And some of that is, you know, can be useful, but it's in wrong context at the wrong time. You know, like they have you know, bits of, say, math which is useful for 3D graphics, right? But they're not given that context. They don't know that yet. They just have the math, and they're not doing the 3D graphics thing. So like at some point in their life, or maybe later during their schooling career, maybe they would actually go deep into this kind of thing where those skills would be useful, but they don't, obviously, and so they have so much math, and in the real work of you know 95% of programmers, almost none of that is actually useful, whereas they have they're taught basics of programming, and there are pretty much basics, and in some universities my friends are attending are better than others, but still the level of that is just not good enough, because, and it's not surprising, because first of all technology changes too fast and universities don't really keep up very much, and second of all the professors who are teaching this are, like we said last week, mostly people who are actually not good enough to work the job, and so like this is who teaches them, and so like sometimes I'm listening to why they failed some exam, some practical exam where you're supposed to write some code, and it's ridiculous. Like the reasons are just like no real programmer would point us out that you're supposed to do X this way, right? It's ridiculous, right? And then you have, again, a lot of things, a lot of theory related to computer science, to programming, which is very useful. But again, they're not given the context. They're not taught it at the time when it's relevant to them. So one of the typical things you learn on computer science classes is a lot about data structures. Some of that is useful, very rarely though, for most programmers, right? But you're taught that without any context. Like for me, like if I were to design a curriculum, you would learn about data structures, but you know, much later, after the practical skills, when you can actually intuitively understand why knowing this can be useful.
Yeah, I mean, and as you said, you know, the teaching lacks the basics of salesmanship. You know, sell us the idea why we should be learning this. You know, what's in it for us? Like, why we should be interested in that, right? I mean, when you're just talking about it, I remember now, and I am older than you, I remember why I didn't go to study computer science. It was for the very same reason. And it was, you know, years ago, it was for the same reason. I decided to study business because I knew that when I study business, I'm going to learn some new things, like something different. But then I have lots of time to study programming on my own, you know? Yeah. So because I was still interested in programming, but I knew that if I would go to study computer science, I wouldn't learn programming. I would learn maths and stuff, and you know, I wouldn't, and then I wouldn't have that much time for programming because I would have to learn this difficult maths. So it would really take me lots of time to figure this out. So I remember even then I already had that mindset, you know, and you know, you're much younger, and I apparently things haven't changed so much.
No, they haven't. That's what I'm seeing with my peers. Those who actually are learning to do real programming are those who learned on their own in their own time, and those who are just following the curriculum in computer science mostly have pretty good grades, but they can't really code that well at all.
Yeah. So
and that's just sad.
Yeah, it's really
like,
sad.
Like those who are good are those who were working outside of the system and not in it. That should be an absurd notion.
Yeah, but and anyway, university and you know, even in high school, but especially in university, there are so many great ways to foster curiosity, to foster, you know, problem solving, you know, to really like focus on that, you know, to focus how to find ways to, like, because university degree should teach you how to learn, you know, how to learn effectively, how to learn well, how to learn new things,
yeah,
should teach you curiosity, and it doesn't. And this is the sad part for me, because I remember the same thing. I remember vividly that people who, and we discussed this a little bit in the last episode, that people who had the best grades in my class in the university were not people who were doing anything exceptional. They were just good cogs in the system, obedient yeah, cogs in the system. And I'm sorry to say, but it was like that.
I guess the last point I would like to make, speaking of practical skills, is of foreign languages. To the listeners who are, you know, native English speakers, that's, I suppose, somewhat less relevant. But if someone is not an English speaker, well, learning English is such a tremendously useful skill. I mean, it opens so many doors to everything, right? But how it looks in practice? Well, for me, in both middle school and high school, I had 3 years of additional, the second foreign language. So I had 3 years of German and 3 years of Russian.
You had Russian and German?
I did, yeah.
Whoa.
As you can imagine, I remember next to none of that. I've learned almost none of that. And that what I learned, I've already forgot. Because none of that was actually useful for me. I had no context for which it would be useful. But just about everyone can find English useful to some extent, right? And the English education is, to me, not good enough. And it's not that it's particularly bad in Poland. I think, young people in Poland are pretty good in English, pretty good in the sense that you can communicate with them. But it's not good enough. It's not good enough. And it's not good enough because the way English is taught is, again, it's within the confines of the system, which just is actually not that good at teaching things. And on the other hand, you waste so much time with the 6 years of additional foreign language that for most people is pretty useless. Like for some people, some people do want to learn another language, and that's fine. But I don't think it should be standard because there's relatively little utility to it. It might be like partially regional, like some places in the world, it does make sense. But in Poland, like if you just use the time, the 6 years that was wasted on German and Russian and just had more English and taught better, like that would be so much more useful.
But as you said, it all depends on the context and on the way you're being taught. I mean, I remember mm-hmm. when I was very very young, we made friends with a German family, and my parents sent us up for a German course for adults. So I was 10 and I was going with my parents to learn a course for adults. So I was pretty much there with a 10-year-old, and I remember the teacher. She was so good. she forced my parents, I mean, because it was for adults, so she didn't assume we would learn lots of grammar. So she gave us some grammar to give us a context to teach us how to say things, but she would force us to speak up, to say things, to, you know, she was trying to get a dialogue out of us, even though we at the very beginning, we knew almost nothing in German. But very quickly, we started, you know, speaking German, you know, and it was so funny because we went like 2 years there. And after that, my German was so good. You know, I was surprised. And then I was sent to Germany for summer holidays. And then I, you know, to a German family, and then I learned everything else. But mm-hmm. I remember that it was so good when you were forced to speak. And I remember that when I came back and I wanted to do a German certificate, you know, I needed a German certificate, you know, later for college. So I signed up for a course to do the certificate, and people were amazed how well I spoke German.
Yeah.
But when it came to doing grammar tests, I was amazed how well they knew grammar, and I had nothing, right? Yeah. And I was like, what is this, right? So that's the thing, you know, the focus on the grammar, on the boring things, on not giving you the context, mm-hmm. why, on not telling you why you should learn German. Because in Poland is like our next door neighbor is Germany. And there are so many reasons to learn German. Okay, it's not the most beautiful language in the world, but it's really useful because Germans are coming to Poland. This is the first country you go to on the west side. So there are reasons, but really, they don't give you these reasons. They don't give you this context. They don't, you know, we don't watch movies, you know, in German in the class to get our comprehension better. No, we just learn stupid grammar stuff. And then they expect us to speak German just by learning, you know, grammar rules. Perfect.
Yeah, and much of that is also transferable to learning English.
Exactly.
I think it's better to sell people on why you need English because, like, you know, just everyone knows some English because, like, if you're using computers, like, there's no way around it, right?
No, I'm not arguing with you that German is more important than English. No, of course, English is the first one. I'm just saying that even German as a second language could be attractive for people if it was sold in a different way. But yeah, English, I'm still amazed how many people maybe my age, your age, or in between, don't speak English or have really poor command of English. Like, English is so important, and like for us, like this is the language of the world. Like, no Esperanto, not other things, English.
Well, I wish it was Esperanto. Esperanto is pretty cool, but that's not the world we live in.
No,
no. But you said that your teachers were shocked at how good you are with just speaking German. Well, pretty much the only. Just about the only, like, really positive experience I had with, like, teachers praising me in high school was during the matura, the maturity final exams. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the maturity exam you have when you finish high school, right? And there was a oral English exam that everyone has to take, though. I also had the expanded version, which also a lot of people took. And, you know, I maxed it out, and they were, like, shocked. It was like, how did you learn? You must have spent so much time in US or UK. And I was like, no.
Never been there.
Like, oh, so you had, like, you had some teachers. Where did you teach? I was like, no, I had none of that. And they couldn't believe me. But I think that's very characteristic of schools, which is that I think people don't really appreciate at how capable people are at learning things if they decide that they want to learn something.
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, I remember it was the same for me. Like, people were like, yeah, you speak so well English. You must have been to the US or England. Or never been in either of these countries. Never.
Yeah.
Like, when I was young, never. Like, I'm going to go to the UK in 2 years. Yeah. Mm. So, like, for a week, right? So no, being in Poland, along with other Polish people, I was, and you were able to learn English so much better because we just took a different approach.
But part of that is, like, if you really decide you want to learn something, people are actually really good at this, mm-hmm. right? Like, and you add to it all the kind of meta skills of, like, how to learn effectively, which school doesn't teach and should have, right? Mm-hmm. And those are the things me and you learned over time. But, like, even without that, people are really capable. It's just, like, I don't think teachers appreciate. If someone wants to learn something, they're going to freaking learn it. Like, you can find all the information you need on the internet for free, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to learn it. But you have to sell them. Like, that's one of the other big points in Seth Godin's book, is that the primary the number one or the number two job of a school should be to sell kids an idea like why you want to learn this, like why is it important, relevant to you,
why it's exciting, why this is something that is worth pursuing. Yeah.
Worth pursuing and useful, because if you manage to sell someone why you want this on your own, not why you have to, but why you want this, again, people are pretty good. People are pretty good at learning. If you decide that you care, and if you decide that you care, you're going to learn in a whole different way, because if you must learn to pass the exam, you're going to learn by heart in such a way that you spend as little time as possible to get as good a grade as possible, and then you'll forget everything. And if you decide that you want to learn something, you'll learn the things in a much more fundamental way. You'll understand things on a deeper level. And that's the kind of understanding, the kind of knowledge that sticks far better.
I would argue that, this is what we're doing even in our company right now. I mean, I can force people to work for Nosby and do our stuff. But instead of that, we're trying, we are getting excited, getting inspired what we can do, how we can help people get organized. I mean, I think this motivates us more than just, you have to do your job and you have to do your program and it has to be. No, I mean, just look at you. I mean, doing the things for iOS, Apple Watch or whatever, like all these things. You get excited about the possibilities of what you can do with that, or how you can bring value to the world and do things differently. And it always works like that. So if you are inspired by an idea, if you buy an idea that people sell to you, you will, jump on the bandwagon and not just say, oh, school is boring, everything is boring, life sucks.
Yeah, having a compelling reason is a far better motivator than authority.